Tonight's topic is part one of Hashavas Aveda. What do you do when you find something lost? How do you know that something is lost? So, again, we're dividing it up into two parts. There's going to be a number of different aspects of these halachas. As you see from the source sheets here, we're going to do tonight just start with the basic general sources of where it comes from, what the extent of Hashavas Aveda is, what does Hashavas Aveda include, and then section three. And four, section three, we'll talk about what it means to be actually lost. How do you know that the object is lost? Number four, we'll talk about some exceptions to the rule of returning lost items, in which cases do you not have to, is there an absolute exception that you don't have to return it? And number five, we'll just start to get into the halachos of siman versus no siman and all those kinds of things. So what constitutes a siman? That we will probably not finish this week. We'll probably continue that into part two. Just by way of, I guess, introduction, there's two excellent books that I have seen, that I've found out there for Halachas Hashavas Aveda in brief. One is, let's start with the Hebrew one. The Hebrew one is called Hashavat Avedak Halacha. Okay, this is this blue book here put up by Rabbi Feinhandler, Rabbi Cheskel Feinhandler. Very, very nice, you know, put together very nicely, very easy to read with nice footnotes. Pretty simple. This actually is Rabbi Orlean's copy. He was nice enough to let me borrow it for this shiurim. The second one is in English, if that appeals to some of you more than the Hebrew. This is called Halachas of Other People's Money by Rabbi Bodner, Halachas of Mukta fame and Halachas of Brachos fame, and Halachas of Kazai's fame, where he actually puts, you know, he has the drawings of the pieces of cake and the cookies and everything. So he wrote a book here on other people's money, which includes three different areas of halacha. One of them is Hashavas Aveda, returning lost property. This is also very, very good. He's also got, you know, Hebrew footnotes on the bottom. So I used both of these Sfarim, especially this one, which is mine, which I own, definitely very much when I was trying to organize the material for myself here. All right. So if you look at section number one, so I think everybody probably is somewhat familiar with this already, but we'll see it inside anyway. There's obviously a Torah basis for the concept of Hashavas Aveda, which I think we all knew. We'll see the Pesukim inside right here. These are Pesukim in Parshas Ki Tse'etzeh in Sefer Dvarim. You should not see the shore, the ox of your brother or your fellow Jew, or his set or his lamb straying off the path, and you should basically ignore them. Meaning, should you ignore them? No, you shouldn't. You should certainly return them to your brother. And if your brother or your fellow is not close to you and you don't know who it is, meaning you don't know who it belongs to, you should take the item and bring it into your house, or the animal, bring it into your house, or I guess in the barn as the case may be. And it should be with you until your brother comes to ask you for it, and then you should return it to him. You should also do the same thing for his donkey, the chen tasel simlatso, for his garments, his clothing. The chen tasel cholavetad achicha shertabad mimena umtata. Okay, so too you should do for anything that your brother, your fellow has lost, that gets lost, and you would find it lo tuchal lihitalein, lo tuchal lihitalein. That you shouldn't allow yourself to turn your eye away from it, you shouldn't ignore it. So you have a lot of things in these psukim. Of course, there's lots of different drushas and halachas that come out of many, many different aspects of these psukim, and we'll, as we go through the sugyas, we'll see some of them at least. The main points here, I guess, in terms of the Torah prohibitions and mitzvos, are really twosome from these psukim. Number one, is in the first pasuk that we have there, Hashev teshivei me'achich. Okay, that's the first one. That's the mitzvah aseh. You probably figured that out. You should certainly return it to your fellow. That's the mitzvah aseh of Hashavas Aveda, returning lost things. My wife said I should play the Hashavas Aveda song. We have one of our kids' tapes. So that'd be nice to start off with that. Okay, I said I wasn't going to do that. I said, no, we want to have all of us singing on the tape here, singing Hashavas Aveda songs. But that's what it is. Okay, that's the mitzvah here. In the second pasuk at the very end, we have the second part, which is lo suchal hisalim, which is the lo sase. You should not let yourself turn your eye away. That's the mitzvah lo sase. You can't turn away if you find a lost object. There's also a third element involved, which we're not going to get into extensively, but obviously the issur of gzeila. If you take a lost object for yourself that you're not allowed to, that's also going to be an issur of gzeila, of stealing when you're not supposed to. Those are the three main issues with respect to Hashavas Aveda. If you look at source number two, again, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but just very briefly, you'll see some of the ways that the Gemara goes back and forth about when they apply, when they don't apply. Look quickly at this is Gemara in Bavim Tzia, Daf Chaf Vav Amud Beis. Amar Rava, Ra'a Sela Shenafla. So if you find a Sela, which is a type of coin that falls down, Not Lalifnei Yush Almanas Lagozla. So let's say that you take it, you pick it up before Yeush. Yeush we'll see a little later tonight and next time how important Yeush is, but I guess we're all somewhat familiar with the concept of Yeush, of giving up hope. Okay, you gave up your rights to the property, you decide that you don't own it anymore. Basically you say, I give up. There's no way I'm going to ever be able to get my lost object back. It's totally lost. It's, you know, in the middle of who knows where. Finished. You give up. So in this case, if you take the object for yourself before the person has given up hope, Al-Manas L'Gozel with the intention of stealing it, so then over Bekulin, you have violated all three points here. Mishum lo sigzol, number gzela, because you intended to steal it while it still belonged to the other person before it gave up hope. Mishum ashev tishivim, you violated the mitzvah saseh of ashev tishivim, giving it back, you were mevatel that mitzvah, because you were supposed to give it back, instead you took it for yourself. And third, mishum lo suchal v'yisalim, turning a blind eye, or ignoring it, again, you violated that also, because you took it for yourself when you weren't supposed to. All of those are in effect before the person has given up hope, meaning the person still owns it, you take it for yourself, you violated all three. The Gemara says, even if you would decide to return it after the other person gives up hope and you have a change of heart and you realize, well, I did something wrong, I don't want to keep it this way, you don't want to have some good merits up in Shemayim, so I'll return it. Doesn't matter, it's too late. It's just like a present they were giving him, the Yisurah Avad Avad. The fact that you already violated Losucha Le'Yisalim, at least in terms of the Losasei, and in terms of, in terms of the Losasei of Losucha Le'Yisalim, it's too late. You lost a chance. You already violated that. You could do Tshuva now, but giving the object back to the other person does not sort of take away retroactively your violation of Losucha Le'Yisalim. That's, by the way, as opposed to Gzeva, which again we're not going to get into now, but Gzeva, of course, if you steal something, the Torah says if you steal it, give it back. We have another song about that on one of the Kivian Tuki records. I don't know if anybody here is ever familiar with Kivian Tuki. You hear them? No? The Chipmunks. The Chipmunks. No. The Chipmunks? No Country Yossi? And the Chipmunks? Okay. Yeah, so they have a song. They have a whole song about Toshua Saveda, about give it back. So that's the story
is
here.
Is it on Kamoishi also? Or is that
he probably has one also. I'm remembering the Kivian Tuki one. But yeah, they all. It's an important mitzvah, what?
Lawsuit going on between Country Yossi and
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, I think there's enough to go around for both of them. I think. Alright. Next case. Alright. Not only Fnei Yush Almanas Lach Zira. So let's say you took it before Yush, before the person gave a hope, and you picked it up on with the intention that you're going to return it. Ula'achar Yush Miskavim goes when after the other person gave a hope, then you decided to steal it. In that case, you're only over Mishamashiv Teshivim. In that case, there's no Lo Sigzol because when it belonged to the other person, you did not plan on stealing it yet. And you picked it up when it was belonged to him. So Lo Suchal Le'Yisalim doesn't apply. But the mitzvah, I say, the positive mitzvah of returning it, you didn't do because you did not return it. Okay? Him Tim La Ashin Yisyashua Balam Anala. Let's say that you waited, that you didn't pick it up. You waited with it in front of you until you found out that the other person gave up hope. And then immediately after you heard somehow that he gave up hope, that he was Miyaj, then you pick it up. In that case, in over Elishim Lo Suchal Le'Yisalim Belvad. In that case, you only violate Lo Suchal Le'Yisalim because Hashiv Teshivim, returning it may only apply after you pick it up. Lo Sigzol, you didn't pick it up at all, so you're not at that point when it belongs to the other person, so you don't violate Gzeva. Only Lo Suchal Le'Yisalim, you had the opportunity to give it back to him, and you did not do that because you just left it there until the other person was Mi'ayish, so Lo Suchal Le'Yisalim, that Lo Tase is violated. Okay, again, you don't have to get all the details here. The point is just to make you aware that there are three different lavin going on here, and again, there might be certain situations where some might apply and the other ones might not apply. Okay, that's just a basic introduction. All right. Next section, section number two. How far does this go? Meaning the following. We have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So we know what that means is if you find something on the street, you find something lost object on the street, you have to give it back. Again, as we'll see later, obviously the rules are not so clear. When the Torah says you have to pick it up and return it, we'll see that that depends really on what you find in the street and what type of object it is. But for now, the question is, are there other cases that are included in the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda that are not exactly the same thing as returning a lost object? Okay, the first example we have here in source number three, let's say that that your neighbor's property is getting damaged. Okay, is there a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to prevent your neighbor's property from being damaged? Okay, so take a look at source number three. This is the Gemara in Bavmetzia on Daf Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph. It says Ra'am Mayin Sheshot Ben Uvan. Let's say that you see water which is about to come and flood your friend's house, or damage your friend's house, okay? Again, let's say that there's a lot of rain, torrential rainfall, your friend is away, okay? He's away for the weekend, and you see something is, you know, either it's flooding or you see that there is, I don't know what exactly you find, but something that you can prevent. If you do something about it right away, you can prevent the damage. So the halachas hariza good with nam. So then you should put, in this case where you think the water is going to be coming in, is going to flood the area, so you have some sort of obligation to put a fence of some sort in front of their property. Amar Rabba, how do we know that? L'chol avidat achicha, because it says in the pasuk we saw above, l'chol chein ta'aseh l'chol avidat achicha. So too should you do for all of the things that your brother lost. What does that include? What's l'chol avidat achicha? All the things include l'rabot avidat karka, includes losing his land or his property. Which basically means, in this case, where your property is going to get damaged, there's also a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to make sure that the property does not get damaged and you can help it. Okay? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's another example I saw in Rabbi Bodner's book here, a very similar example, but his example is not exactly a flood, but a water leak. Okay, let's say you say that you see a water leak damaging somebody else's building. Okay, so in that case, you can turn it off. Or if the case is that you need to tell, you know, the person who owns it or the manager, whatever it is, that is definitely, if you have that opportunity, that is definitely your mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to do. The Aruch HaShulchan in source number 4 takes it even a little bit of a step farther. He says not only does this apply to somebody's property, to Aveda's karka, it also applies to even a more general type of damage. Look at the Aruch HaShulchan. He quotes the halacha above that in Siman Reish Nites in Choshen Mishpat. And after he quotes the above halacha of Aveda's karka, he adds in v'chein v'chol en yane hefzed, she'achol lios etzol chaveru. So too the same is true for any type of loss that might be, that your friend might encounter. U'v'yachol to l'mnoa hezek. And if you're, it's in your opportunity, what'd you say?
You could stop the damage, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's in your capability to prevent the damage from taking place. Chayav l'mnoa, you are obligated to do so. The loas again, and if you didn't do it, is it just okay? You missed an opportunity. No, over ba'asei dashiv tishivim. You have violated. You have been batal yasev hashiv tishivim. Uvelos hasei delos suchal le'esalad. Okay, so basically that means any opportunity that you have to prevent damage to your friend, and in this case we're talking about hefsed, like a physical damage. Though again, there are other discussions also that spiritual damage, which we're not going to get into now. The halacha is certainly that is a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. I'll tell you one case that somebody asked me, and then if you have any other cases, feel free to throw them in here. Somebody asked me on Shabbos a couple weeks ago at the Hashkam Minyan, actually. This is your credit, right? It was during Davening, actually, but it was...
No talking this.
Right, so he asked me and I said, don't talk! No, I'm joking. I didn't say that. I think it was right before Kriyas HaTorah, so that's already like in between, you know, Shabbos and Kriyas HaTorah. So he comes up to me and he says, my neighbor was away for Shabbos and he left his sprinkler on. I said, that's interesting. So what's your question? So he said, should I turn it off? So I said, is this a Shabbos question or a damage type of question? So basically he said that, you know, when I pressed him about it, he said that he agreed that probably his friend did not plan on having his sprinkler go off on Shabbos. That's a whole other story, whether that's allowed or not. Generally it's recommended not to do it, but kind of it's a discussion. Not so clear. But he says it was clear to him that the neighbor didn't realize that it was going on now, and had he known that it was on, he definitely would have been happy if his neighbor would turn it off. I said, if that's the case, then absolutely you are allowed to turn it off, assuming that there's no electronics involved, assuming it's just a regular sprinkler hose system that you just turn off the water the same way you turn off your sink. It shouldn't be necessarily a problem of Shabbos. I said, definitely you can turn it off, and I said, according to many poskim, I had a mind here with the Aruch HaShulchan and the others, you might even be mekayem the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda by doing so if, you know, you're causing him to lose money. You know, who knows, we already know that sprinkler systems and water, you know, in this area is not cheap. I guess maybe it went down after we got rain this year, but it's still, it's not cheap to water your lawn. So certainly that's going to save him at least some amount of money by turning it off. I said, absolutely, according to this, there should be maybe even an obligation to turn it off if that's what he wanted, meaning if that's what he would want. Okay. Any other examples of this that you can think of before we go on that anybody wants to share? No.
I guess so. We define it as physical damage or monetary damage.
Monetary. We're going to include as physical damage in this context. Yeah. You can think of it in plenty of other examples, I'm sure, as well. In source number 5.
I noticed Phil's light was on for Shabbos. I didn't think about it. You mark sound light over there.
That's a little bit more topical.
Now I got to go ask Rav Eli for the cool of the week.
Okay, so that's a question, right? So Hashavas Aveda is so important. Maybe we should turn off the light on Shabbos in order to not. Yeah, no, I don't think we're gonna go that far.
Okay.
No, I don't think we're gonna go that far.
But do you have to? Are you required to incur a loss?
Are you required to incur a loss for ourselves? That's what you're asking. Yeah. That's an excellent question. I apologize that I did not put that. That's a good question. I didn't put it on here. The halacha is that you are not required to incur a loss. That's already explicit from the Mishnah and the Gemara. Again, I apologize. I should have put it on here somewhere. But it's clear that you have an obligation to use your time and effort to try to save somebody's property or to do Hashem's need in the first place. You are not obligated to spend your own money to find somebody else's object and try to return it to them. If you are almost certain that he will reimburse you for your effort to do so, then it could be that maybe you should. They talk about it here. They have a whole discussion here. I think he quoted Rabbi Bodner's book. Maybe it was this book. I think it was Rabbi Bodner's book. About, let's say that you're on the street. I guess his case is in Manhattan, but same thing anywhere. Whatever, you find somebody lost something, and you see them that they get in the cab, and they speed off in the cab, and you see they drop something. As they're getting in the cab, they drop their phone, or they drop their something or other, and you, in order to get them back, in order to get it back, then you probably, unless there's a way to find out where the person lives or whatever it is, which maybe with the phone you could, but basically the easiest way to get it back is basically to go jump in another cab and follow that cab, right? He's been weaving through the streets.
So
that's another option. So in the phone case, it could be you don't have to do that because in the phone case, you can assume that at some point he's going to call his phone. As long as he can answer the phone when it rings, could be that's good enough. All right, Bodner says in that case that you are not obligated to spend your own money to jump in the cab to go to try to get it back to him. Again, he's quoting other quotes. I don't remember who he's quoting anymore. Maybe I'll mention
so
it for next time.
He's differentiating between money and time.
Yeah.
Because time is money.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You could be on the job.
Let me just finish up with just the point there. That in that case, he says that if you're pretty certain that the guy will reimburse you for your cab, then already maybe you do have an obligation to do it. But if you're not sure, then you don't have that for you. Maybe I'll just put, maybe for next week, I'll put some more, one or two of those sources on the source sheet again. I should have put it on this week. I didn't think of it. It's clear from the Torah, you have an obligation to return the lost object. By definition, that requires either some sort of time or effort. So that's clear. What's not clear from the Torah doesn't say that you have to spend money on it. So the Gemara, they talk about that. If you find a lost donkey, so that's a question. If you find a lost donkey, you got to feed it. So how much money do you have to spend on feeding the donkey? So they say that, any money that you have to incur extra feeding the donkey, the donkey can't pay back to you in terms of, let's say, working for you or something like that, is not required. Again, he has other options, discussions here also. Let's say you learn, you're in kolo, you have to take away from your work time in order to, do that. Are you obligated to do that? So again, that's also not so clear. It could be that you don't have to do so. If, your boss doesn't care and it's a couple minutes, then maybe yes. But if he says, don't do this on my time, on your work hours, then maybe you don't have an obligation of Hashem today at that moment. So you would wait until you're done. Again, maybe I'll next week I'll put one or two things on the source sheet if I remember. But that is all discussed, and I guess it goes in this section here. Okay, I don't know if we'll read this inside now. I guess we'll read 5 inside, and 6 you'll tell me if you want to read inside. Number 5. This is an interesting source. The Shulchan Aruch here says, what happens if you see that the person that lost it doesn't really care about his item, or you saw him actually throw it down, and it's clear he doesn't want it. So look at this. It says, if the person intentionally tries to make his money get lost, and he tosses his money away, you don't have an obligation to try to return it to him. This, by the way, means not only does he get rid of his money, but if he's very negligent about it. In this case, he takes his cow, he puts it in the refet, and there's no door. The lokasha, he didn't tie the cow on the side or something like that. So what's going to happen? Okay, cows aren't, he's going to walk out, right? Of course the cow's going to walk out. The halach lo. The eshomim, and then he has another opinion here, the refet lo mikre aveda midat, the chayav lahav zira. Maybe putting it in the refet is not included in this category, but the principle is such that if you, the owner, don't do a normal job of keeping it where it's supposed to be, then somebody that finds it doesn't necessarily have an obligation to return it. The next case, hishlich kisov rishus harabim v'halachlo. If you see somebody throwing their wallet or their money into the rishus harabim and then he walks away, harizah ibe b'mono l'dato, then he basically has given it up and there's no mitzvah of hashavas aveda. He got rid of it. Now here's the debate here. Again, we're not going to go into this so much, but just you should be aware there's a debate. Are you allowed to pick it up in that case? So the Shulchan Aruch says, "V'afalti she'asur l'roa davarzel lito la'atzmo eno zokav l'hachzir." He said, the Shulchan Aruch says, you're actually not allowed to pick it up there. You have to leave it there. If you saw him actually get rid of it and toss it on the street, you can't pick it up. You have to just leave it there, but you don't have an obligation to return it. Shenamar asher tovad. It's got to be lost by itself. Problem avid l'dato. That excludes when he makes it lost on his own, meaning intentionally makes it lost. The Rama disagrees. Rama says Yeshalom da'abeyo midas ha'vehefker v'chol ha'kod mizacha. The Rama says that if you do this, if you intentionally try to lose it, then it's considered to be hefker, and indeed you can, anybody else that finds it can bring it back. Okay, it's not that you have to leave it there. So that's a machlokas. Again, usually for Ashkenazim, we would pass along the Rama, that if you see somebody doing that it's permitted to take it. We almost had this case, actually, last Shabbos. We found, we saw somebody with a teddy bear, like, walking in the street on Shabbos, and some kid was taking the teddy bear and just, like, you know, throwing it up and down and tossed it on my son saw. He saw him just toss it in the middle of the street on the folks' lot. So the Nachum Shlomo comes to me and says, Abba, should we pick that up? What should we do with it, you know? So I said, I'm not sure. I wanted to know, was the kid that was holding the bear and tossed it down, it was, you know, I guess maybe a young teenager, maybe 9, 10 years old, or a little bit older, maybe. Was it his bear, or was it somebody else's bear? If it was his bear, then that's his debate here. Maybe, according to Rashi Nazim, you could actually keep it. It was right in the middle of the street there.
If it's not his bear, then you can't. Then you're back
right,
to the original
correct.
Question.
If it's not a bear, then it's back to the original question, which we haven't really talked about yet. What do you do with that type of bear?
Right.
So Ibn Rashi Nazim didn't know. He didn't know whose bear it was. I wasn't sure. My guess was that because the kids looked a little older, that it was probably not their bear. I don't think most 9 or 10-year-olds have little teddy bears they walk around with, you know, to take with them and, you know, take to sleep with them or whatever. So my guess was that it did not belong to them, and they found it there, and they picked it up for a second and then just dropped it again. That was my guess. So therefore, that'll be set to the rest of the discussion of what do you do with lost objects, which we will get to. But again, that's, you know, it does happen sometimes. Okay. Would you like to read source number 6? This is an interesting shuvah from Rav Moshe, which I actually don't know what he's talking about. But apparently he's dealing with some issue of zoning laws, which he thinks also, fighting them, is also included in this category. Do you want to read it? I will read it. Just might get stuck. Some of the other sources here we won't get to, but I guess it's all right. Motion is in source number 6. Hinei v'davar inyan hayadua sheshoton ha'ir hachlit livnos sham binyonim. Okay, this is in Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Beis Simon Chafez. He says there is some sort of known thing that they knew about at the time. This was one of the later chivas of Rav Moshe, very towards the end of his life. So I guess it was probably maybe in the early 80s. I don't remember the exact date. But the government of the city had decided to build certain buildings in this area of New York, that the people that lived there, the residents, did not want. That they gathered there from all the places that they had to flee. I mean, basically, he's talking about Jews that were kicked out from other places in the world, and they came to New York and they wanted to, you know, they wanted to settle. That it's Yashu Sham, and they'd settled there, with the thought that there should be a place of, you know, a little bit of, you know, not to be chased around by the goyim like we've been in every other place in our gullus. Have a little bit of menucha here. The He says that they had to pay a lot of money for buying these houses or whatever apartments, whatever they bought in these neighborhoods of New York. Maybe Eric can help me out here and figure out what's going on. You'll see in a minute why I'm a little confused. And there were also shuls and bati medrash that were built there. Yeshivas, katanim, golem, elementary school yeshivas and high school yeshivas, bati sefer, Beis Yaakov, right, girls' schools, etc., etc. V'atzai says, matzav binyanim elu, chas v'shalom, right, to deal with these buildings, shagam of forest hills, read that again, forest hills, okay, see, everybody here is from America, so you all know, well, at least heard of forest hills, right? The Chol HaYoros HaSmuchos L'Sham and all the other cities nearby, which you can add in. Those of us from New York know already. Maybe it means Kew Gardens, maybe Kew Gardens Hills. Who knows? Whatever the other ones near Fresh Meadows, whatever the other ones are nearby. Shekol a million Yehudim Yoser. There are more than a million Jews there. But Yuchul Ador Shem Pachad Kiadua. They can't live there anymore because of this pachad, this type of fear, as is well known. Does anybody know what in the world he's talking about here? I unfortunately have to admit I did not know what he's referring to. Again, this is something that happened in the beginning of the 1980s, maybe the late 1970s, that they were going to do some sort of zoning laws in that area of Queens to basically make it either that something else was going to be built, or they were going to replace all these buildings and kick all of these institutions out of their buildings and put something else there. Do you have any idea what happened here? I tried to search online before I gave this year. I tried to look up in Google, you know, Moshe Feinstein, Choshen Mishpat, Forest Hill, zoning laws, or Feinstein, all these different things. I could not figure out what he was talking about. So if anybody can find out from there, I would be very appreciative. Maybe there's somebody that listens to this on YU Torah. If anybody has any clue what Moshe is talking about, please send me an email, Ozarowski, OZAROWSKI at hotmail.com. I would really love to hear. Rabbi Bonner quotes his shuvah, by the way, but he doesn't say what he's talking about. He just says that
I'll ask my parents.
You can ask him. I'd be very curious.
If you're saying it's the early 80s, I was still really.
I believe it's Moshe with the chuva. This is one of the later chuvas. He just says, according to some posts, in the midst of returning lost items, also includes taking time to help one's neighbors protest zoning issues that will cause a negative impact on the value of neighborhood homes or quality of life. That's the context of Red Bodner says the chuva is talking about. But again, he doesn't give the details, so I'm curious to know what exactly happens here. So if you can find out, please let me know. Anyway, so Moshe says, here's the key point for us. He says, Lachain pashut ubarer, it's obvious and clear, she'asur l'chol adam, liyos miram esayim l'shaltono ha'ir. He says, you cannot support the government here. Afilu b'miktas, lo b'masav, lo b'etza. Not in action and not in advice to them. Elasha adrava mitzah shavas aveda. Even the opposite, in terms of hashavas aveda, daguf, physically, v'hamoman, in terms of monetarily, ikachiyud al kol echad be'echad, there's an obligation on every person, la'azur la'toshavim ha'chim b'nei Yisrael, to help all of our Jewish brothers who are residents of this area of Queens, hanim tzayim sham, b'chol mashe ha'shar l'batel devazer, in any way possible to abolish this type of rule, we should help them. And Moshe's, this obligation is one of hashavas aveda, to help them prevent any type of loss in this type of case. Okay, any questions?
So basically he's talking about something where these people own a home. They built up a lifestyle in Forest Hills or the surrounding areas where I came from.
Yeah.
And now the rule, the laws have changed, and whatever they're going to be able to rezone, it's going to cause the value on paper, but I mean a value of the property to go down.
Either that, or it's going to cause the Jews to have to move out because they're going to ruin their whole neighborhood. Again, it's not clear. I wish I knew the details. I think the point is pretty clear.
You know, going ahead, we don't know what happened back in the 80s, but going ahead, later 90s, more and more yeshivas were built in Forest Hills. Everything worked out, it'll be interesting to find out.
But the question that I would have is that bringing him farther to the Kol Gush Katif incident, you know, how is that affected by Rav Moshe Shuva? I mean, here you're talking about zoning you would think that, you know, just based on this Shuva alone, regardless of the political implications, regardless of anything else.
Right.
Rav Moshe seemed to hold that, you know, protesting also Gush Katif would be. What's the difference?
I'm not going to vouch for what Rav Moshe would have felt about the situation of Gush Katif.
But it's the same.
What Rav Moshe is saying here, the only application that I can say for sure is the following: that any case where the Jews are going to be, let's say, you know, their lifestyle will be ruined, or the Jews will be kicked out in a situation where the Torah would say that should not happen. Then Rav Moshe would say, yes, you have to protest as much as you can to try to make sure that it doesn't happen. In the case of Gush Katif, any case of Eretz Yisrael, it's already a little more complicated because you're already, you know, one can argue that there's pikuach nefesh involved in the fact that they live there and our relations with the Arab neighbors and land for peace, et cetera, which again, I don't really buy, and most people at this point, I think, don't buy either. But the point is that it's subject to all those issues. Is this really the right decision or not, according to the Torah? If the answer is that the right decision is that they shouldn't move and we shouldn't kick them out, for whatever reason that might be, either because we can't give up parts of Eretz Yisrael or because it's not going to help us politically, whatever it is, then absolutely, I think Rav Moshe's Shuva would absolutely apply. We'd have to try to help them and stand up for them and spend our time, I don't know if it means to go to Hafka, no, whatever it would mean, whatever, you know, donations, whatever way you can help.
I don't say
absolutely.
You can't just...
Rav Moshe, if Rav Moshe would say that the right thing to do is that we should have left certain areas because of the fact that it will help with the peace process, or because, I don't know,
So in other words, if there was some kind of positive aspect to what's going on in Kew Garden Hills over here in the 1980s, then you think Rav Moshe's Shuva would have been different. I don't know if there's some
positive aspect. In that case, I think if the major thrust is that it's bad for the Jews, then what he's saying would apply. Yeah. What I'm saying here is that because it involves things in Eretz Yisrael, so you have to take another step back, and you have to look at it from the general Torah perspective about, can you give up land, can you get out of territories, can you throw Jews out of their houses in these type of situations? And most Poskim apparently have said that that's not good. Not everybody protested.
His rationale.
I understand. I agree. I agree. But I'm saying any Poskim that would say in any given situation that the right thing to do is that we should leave that area because either it's dangerous or because whatever X, Y, Z,
then
you cannot apply Rav Moshe's law.
Okay.
You understand?
That's where I'm saying. I wasn't making political.
You can't start taking Rav Moshe.
Rav
Moshe said about Gush Katif that getting out of Gush Katif is bad. I have no idea what Rav Moshe would say about Gush Katif. I don't have a clue. He died, you know, 20 years, but 15 years before.
I agree with you.
Stop trying to hijack Rav Moshe for your political purposes.
I'm just reading it the way you're reading it.
Okay. Very good. Okay, let's go on. We're going to skip now. We are going to skip section 3 and come back to it at the end. Let's skip to section 4 right now. What are cases that are exceptions to the rule of when there is no specific mitzvah of hashavas aveda? So if you look at, let's look at source number 8. Okay. All right, so again, I helped you out here. I gave you a little, you know, kotera here in English also of what the topic is here. It says, lost for a long time. What's the case here? Shulchan Aruch says in the Siman Reish Tam Beis, Sifhei, v'chein hamotzi darash mochiach po, sheyesh zman rav, shenevab nivalav, v'nesiashu habalan. Similarly, somebody who finds something, which it's clear from the way that it looks or where the location of where it's found that it was lost for a very, very long time from its owners, and it's clear that the owners probably would have given up hope a long time ago. Who shall mota? Then it's clear that it belongs to the person that finds it. Even if we'll see later that the criteria for normally when you say that you should announce it apply, meaning it's an object which has characteristics that you can find and maybe you should return, if it's been lost for such a long time, you can assume that if the person has given up hope, then you're allowed to keep it. Okay, that's exception number one. All right. Again, you can think of just anything that you find, like in the bushes somewhere that is obviously so dusty and so, you know, it's been there, it's already layers and layers of things on top of it already. Whatever it is, it's clear that it's been lost for such a long time. Nobody is thinking about that anymore. They've given up hope, you know, many, many years ago or many, many weeks ago. Whatever it is, you're allowed to keep that. Number nine, what about a goy? So the Gemara says, Gezel Knani Aser, Avedasu Muteres. Okay, you're not allowed to, at least, it's Machlok, as we pass, you're not allowed to steal from a non-Jew. However, a lost object from a non-Jew is permitted to be taken. Shenemar, V'chol Avedas Achicha, L'Achicha Tamaser, V'ya Tamaser L'Knani. The Torah says, as we said before, L'chol Avedas Achicha. So before we said L'chol, everything that's included, everything includes even, you know, physical, even property. Here we're saying that the word Achicha, your brother, means L'Achicha Tamaser, to a Jew, who's your brother, you would have to be ma'asir, but to a non-Jew who's not your brother, there's no obligation of Hashoah Saveda. The Shulchan Aruch based on the Rambam, the source number 10, even takes it a step farther. Ha-ma'asir, ha-reza over avera. If you do return it, you violate an avera. Why? That seems to be a little extreme. Mipneishu ma'asik de'avera avera, because you are helping those that are violating averas. This is a question, okay? Again, we're not going to go into this now, especially because for those of us who live in Israel here, so it's not nearly as common here, I guess, unless you find, you know, some of the Thai workers or the Palestinian workers' things, you have to return things to them. I guess that's a question. I don't know what they'll do to you if you don't return it. If they know you have it, you might get in trouble. But the point is here that that it's unclear which type of non-Jews we're talking about. There are those that understand this to mean the non-Jews back in those days who were really wicked people, very evil people, those non-Jews, they were considered to be over out there and not nice to Jews, then you don't have to return their things. But today, any non-Jews that are considered to be civilized in society, then the halacha might be different, then maybe you do have to return them. Whatever the story is there, the Shulchan Aruch continues, these are the most important points for us, either non-Jews in Israel or in America, certainly. If you return... if you return the object in order to Kaddish Shem Shemayim as a Kiddush Hashem, so that people should see, oh wow, Jews are wonderful people. They are Balei Amuna. They have a certain, you know, faith towards God. Harizim Meshuvach. That's a very, very praiseworthy thing. And if there's a Chil Hashem involved, if you don't return it, then you have to return it if it's going to create a Chil Hashem otherwise. And then it continues also. At the end of the day, the bottom line is even if the other things do not apply, in terms of Darche Shalom and keeping the peace, also there's an idea that you really should take the utensils and bring them in and try to give them back. So the bottom line is certainly if you find even a non-Jew, you find their wallet or something else on the street, which is something that you can actually announce or return, you definitely should try to return it. Okay, let's go on. Any questions so far on this section? No, any other interesting examples that you can add here to make this? No. Okay. Next case, number 11. All right. Umar says in the Daf Lamed Bav Metzia, V'his Alamta. We said before, V'his Alamta to him, right? Can it be that you would ignore it? No, Hashav Teshiva, we should return it. So the fact that the Gemara, the Torah says, V'his Alamta to him, that you should turn your eye away, we read it as a rhetorical question. Could you possibly turn your eye away? No, of course not, you should return it. But the Gemara Darshan is no, really, it says, V'his Alamta to him, that sometimes you should turn your eye away. What does that mean? It says, Pavim Shatam Misalim, Pavim Shia Tam Misalim. Sometimes you should turn your eye away, and sometimes you shouldn't. Okay, Zad. How does this work? Haya Kohen, if there is a Kohen and he's in a cemetery, sorry, and the object is in a cemetery, so obviously the Kohen can't go there. Osha Zakim Ein Alech Bichvodo, or it's a Zakim, an elderly person, or even a big Talmud Chacham, and it's beneath his dignity to bend down and pick up the lost object. Osha Yisim Malacha Shalom Rumi Shal Chavero, or his Malacha is more than his friend, meaning the one that has to do it has to endure, you know, whatever, he has to go through more work than his friend to pick it up. So in that case, basically, we say that you would actually be allowed to turn your eye away in any of these kinds of situations, and you wouldn't actually have to try to return it. Again, the practical application of that is not so clear. But again, the application would be somebody that's considered to be a very important person. The example Rabbi Bodner gave was, let's say you saw something underneath somebody's car. So you have to bend down under the car to, you know, grab it and get your, you know, coat all dirty, whatever it is, in order to pick it up. So again, if you're considered to be an important person, if it's ena l'fi chvodo, then you don't have to pick it up. You don't have to return it. And one of the criteria that's given to try to figure out what that means is that it depends on if you would pick it up for yourself. If it's an object, not that you wouldn't pick it up because you don't feel like it or because it's not worth your effort, but if it's beneath your dignity for your own object to pick it up, that if you would be embarrassed if you lost, if something fell to the floor.
A five-agro piece.
Yeah, exactly. So a five-agro piece, those kinds of things, which is, by the way, will be maybe in the exception of source number 12, which we'll get to in a minute. But things like that, that, you know, it's beneath your dignity to pick up, even if it belongs to you, so the same thing would apply to somebody else. One second here. Look at source number 12. If it's less than a sheva pruta, also it's not included. Tanu rabbanan, asher tovad prat lavei l'shem sheva pruta. Something which is not worth a sheva pruta also is not included in the midst of a sheva aveda. The value of a sheva pruta again is not clear, but anywhere, you know, a very small small amount. In American money, I think they say it's maybe something which is a nickel. Today it could be probably even more than that. In Israel,
we from Yaakov Avinu that he's very makbid about every
that's
single
true.
Cent.
That's true. So I don't know if they would say that's true.
And
less
Rashi
than
says it's not. It's tamidicha.
Right. I don't know if they would say that's less than a shel pruta. That's probably more than a shel pruta. In Israel, again, it depends on how what people buy here. What's the smallest coin? This is how Ramosh understands it. What's the smallest coin that you can buy something with? Exactly.
Used to be nickel when I was
exactly.
Going
so Ramosh, Rabbi quotes this in from Ramosh in his book here. Ramosh is in America in his time when he wrote it. I think it was nickel. Today, maybe it's a quarter, maybe even a dollar. Unclear. I don't know. I have to decide. In Israel, I don't know. It's going to be a half agora piece. Half shekel, maybe, is sheva pruta. According to this version. Again, there are other ways of defining it also. There are other ways that they try to figure out based on the amount of silver and the amount of worth. But in terms of a working definition, I think this makes the most sense. So again, it depends. If it's if a half a shekel, you can buy some things. I think you can still buy certain things, you know, little things with a half a shekel. But maybe not. I don't know. Okay, either it could be a half shekel or a shekel. Would probably be a sheva pruta. I don't remember if in the Hebrew Sefer Hashas Aveda Kil Chasa, whether he mentions what a sheva pruta is here. I think he says here. Where is here? I have to go look it up. Here it is. Aleph Zion. He says very quickly. He says that a sheva pruta is. No, actually he doesn't. No, he doesn't bother to tell you how much a sheva pruta is. Oh well, I guess everybody knows. Okay. Anyway, so that's in terms of the sheva pruta. Now, an interesting question again, which we don't have time to really get into so much, but the interesting question is the following. Okay, let's say that that you find again. We'll get to the very very practical parts of this a little bit later. Probably we'll finish it up next week, but we'll start with the practical case. Let's say you find one little shoe or one little, let's say, croc or some sort of, you know, sneaker or slip or whatever it is. Out in the street or in the park somewhere. Okay. Now, again, there are different aspects to this question, which we'll deal with more as we go on. But for now, just in terms of the sheva pruta aspects, okay, is that sneaker or, you know, shoe, is that worth a sheva pruta to you, the finder? Think about it.
No.
Probably not. Why not?
Can't do anything.
Because what are you going to do with one shoe, right? One shoe is absolutely worthless to you, right? The only question would be, can you sell it anywhere? Probably not. Who's going to buy one shoe, right? So for you, it stands to reason that some object like that might be considered a sheva pruta. However, for the person that lost it, is that shoe considered to be a sheva pruta? What?
Who has the other shoe?
Exactly. The person that has the other shoe probably is a sheva pruta. Okay, even if the shoes are cheap, they're probably at least worth a sheva pruta.
Then you can go back to, let's say, 10 agurot, right? The guy has 50 agurot, 5 tens in his pocket, and
right.
He loses one. So to you, the 10 is nothing. But if he gets that 10, now he gets that 10 back, that brings him up to he could buy something with 50.
You're saying if you would hold that a shekel as a sheva
pruta. Half a shekel.
Lose half a shekel as a sheva pruta anyway.
And you have five tens coins in your pocket.
Right.
You have 50 agurot, a shekel.
Right.
And you lose one.
Right.
Now you can't buy anything with it. But if the guy returns that 10, it brings you from 40 to 50,
okay.
And you can
so
buy something.
Sorry.
It's the same.
Listen, sorry. The only difference is there that it could be that you don't have to return coins because you don't know how to find the owner of coins.
Okay, but
coins might be different. But in terms of the principle, it's a good point. I don't know. I wouldn't know how to determine that, which is I guess the same point that you don't know how to find out who the owner is. Somebody dropped the lost the coin. So that's a question. Okay, so in that case, is that considered to be a sheva pruta that you have to return? So the Hashoras Aveda Kalacha are quoting Machlokas Achron between the Nesivos Hamishpat and the Chazon Ish about this point. It seems that most of the contemporary poskim paskin. That you would have to return it, that we follow the sheva pruta of the person that lost it. I think he quoted Rav Eliyashiv as saying that. Rav Bodner also quotes Rav Moshe. I think they both quote Rav Moshe as also saying that we follow the person that lost it. Whatever is considered to be a sheva pruta for the person that lost it, you would have to return. even if for you it's not worth a shofar pruta, which again, if there was a way to return money, so in your case also, I presumably it would be the same thing. The problem is it's just hard to know that, and that's a little bit subjective, because in one case maybe half a shekel is a shofar pruta, and in another case it's not. It gets very sticky, so I don't know if you can give...
Is there a way, let's see, talk about money, is there a way to return money?
We're going to talk about money next week. We're not going to get to money this week. Okay, we'll have to get to money next week. The interesting tshuva that I saw there, he quotes a tshuva, listen to this, is picking up a passport. If you find a lost passport, okay, is a passport considered to be worth a shofar pruta?
Of course,
Very
valuable.
The thing is, if you look at it, the same, it's really part of the same chakira. So he points this out in the Sefer HaShoah Sevedek HaAlacha. For you, the passport is worth absolutely nothing.
That's
unless,
not true.
Well, unless
you
you're one of
the
people...
to forge...
Okay, so if you belong to the Mossad and you want to go murder Hamas people in, you know, in Dubai, or where it was, where was it?
Dubai,
right?
You could sell it.
Sorry, the Hamas, they didn't, I didn't say they did that. But let's say that the Mossad people did it.
No,
and
no,
let's
no,
say
no.
that they know how to forge passports, what?
No, you don't have to be it yourself. You could sell it to somebody. It's worth it to
is
somebody
really
who's
true?
In the business. You could sell it to people who are in the business of...
What business?
Of
forging
of
passports?
Of doing this thing. Meaning you're not doing
what?
It yourself.
Of doing what? Forging passports?
Of taking passports, using forged passports for IDs, for different things.
Okay.
Meaning
it's,
there's a market
probably
for it.
Illegal.
There's
right, so the question is, if it's illegal, is that considered to be worth a shofar pruta? You're not allowed to do it anyway. You're not allowed to sell them passports. That's definitely illegal. Is that considered to be worth a shofar pruta, the fact that you could make money out of it in a legal way? That's a good question. I don't know. I'm going to have to leave that one as a tzarafim. Anyway, I can tell you what the Beis Yitzchak said, the Rav Yitzchak Shmalkus, who lived a while, you know, in Europe. So
you found, remember when I first met you, when you came to Yad Binyamin, you found not a passport,
that's
but
right.
$2. Now, were you required? I mean, you happened to see me, so I'm, you know, but otherwise, you know, well,
question.
You didn't know where he was.
I found Eric's brother-in-law, Rabbi Yaakov Haver. I found his $2
in a taxi.
That I was taking a taxi in Yerushalayim somewhere, I think.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what you said.
And I found the $2 before, and I look at it, it's Rabbi Yaakov Haver, who I had a connection with from Yeshiva University, and it has the Eric's brother-in-law. Like, what in the world? That's the same Shiloh, right? For him, it's worth a shofar pruta, probably.
Oh,
for
yeah.
me, it's worth absolutely nothing, right?
Especially back then when you just made Aliyah.
Right, yeah, 100%. So according to most of the posting we're seeing here, the answer is, of course, you have to return it. It's worth a shofar pruta to the finder, to the owner. The Beis Yitzchak apparently said in Europe, when they had passports back then also, he said that if you find a passport on the street, you are not obligated to return it. Why is that? Because for you, you can't do anything with it, and if you can't do anything with it, it's not worth a shofar pruta. End of story. Apparently, the Beis Yitzchak disagreed. Apparently, he held that the shofar pruta follows the person that found it, and not based on the person that that lost it. But again, most of the contemporary posts don't do that. And if you ask me, that's a very surprising shock to say to not return a passport, even if you say it's not mechuya. But it, certainly that's a case where I would say for sure, like with nimushuras hadin, that you'd have to. But again, to be honest, I didn't see the tshuva inside because I don't have it on my bar lan. I couldn't see it inside. I just saw him quoted here. But again, it's an interesting mar makom. Halacha l'maaseh, if you find the passport, you should definitely try to give it back. Okay. Definitely would pass like the other shittos. Okay, last case in section 4 here. Let's say the Shulchan Aharav is a very interesting point, and this I think is a very, very common case as well. He says here, let's say it's not worth your time to pick it up. Take a look at this. Okay, it's on the next page here, the actual source. The answer of the Shulchan Aharav says, "In lo haya machzirum atma machmas hatzoreach, shelo haya chafetz lichroach liso samaveso." Certainly in a case where, if it was, let's say, your own object, if you would not return it for yourself, if you lost it, because it's just not worth your effort, okay? You didn't feel like going through the effort to go back and take the item yourself, okay? Hold the ham, kalim, chusim, and the man, watson. It's just not very valuable, okay? The lo nesh elam lefi chvodo. That's, again, the case that he's saying is that not that it's beneath your dignity to bend down to pick it up, but rather, it's just, you don't feel like it. It's just not worth your time. Okay, this happens to me sometimes. You drop a 10 on a raw piece, and you don't feel like picking it up. It's just not worth your while. Is it anal if you go? No, if I lost a 10 shekel piece, I certainly would bend down immediately and pick it up. But the point is that it's just not worth enough money. So in that case, the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, the halacha is that you absolutely do need to make the effort to try to return it. Until you get it back to the owner. Because for yourself, you have the option of basically getting, you know, saying, I don't care about it, I'll let it go. Maybe it's a rough move because it's not worth my effort. But you don't have that option of saying the same thing for your friend. Oh, it's not worth my while or my effort or my time to bend down and pick it up and try to find the owner. The Torah had mercy on, you know, sensitivity to kavod habrios, but not on your personal effort that it takes to pick it up. Even if it's a lot of tircha, if it's more than a shavar pruta, and it's something which is returnable, you have the obligation to try to return it. Even if it was your own month, your own object, you would not have done so. That's a very important point, because that's, again, that happens frequently. Okay, any questions? Okay. Let's start. I don't know. We're not going to finish this. So you want to start the next section, or you want to leave it till next week? What do you say?
10:30.
It's 10:28.
Let's say someone loses something, and then they drop dead the next day.
Someone loses something?
Someone loses something.
Right.
And then the owner dies the next day.
Right.
Would the use have an obligation to return it to...
The heirs.
I mean, you know that...
Maybe a far-out question.
It's something that's returnable.
No, it's not a far-out question.
What was that?
It's not a far-out question.
Has this happened to you before?
I found some.
It's a good question.
I found something, but by the time I go to return, it's only, you know...
Well, here's the question. I mean, when do you find out the person died? I mean, when you returned it, when you announced it, you didn't know yet that the person died, right? Now, you're saying at the point when you find out, oh, so the Yorshim come and say it belongs to us. That's what you're saying? That you find out later that it belongs to somebody who died. So it's a good question. I think you would say probably that... usually we say that anything that the person that died owns would... go, you know, get transferred to the next whoever the person that's going to take ownership is. As long as it's something that had he been alive, he wouldn't have been the Yayish for. I would say probably in this case also that he's not, that there's no use to the place and therefore it still belongs to them and therefore you would have to return it. That's what I would guess. I didn't see that case explicitly. Could be that it's later on in the statement, which I haven't. I just got it today.
Or do you say the Yayish immediately kicks in?
No, there's no Yayish, that's for sure. No, it depends what kind of object we're talking about. If it's an object which anyway you can assume that the person gave up hope right away, then you for sure you could give it. But if we're talking about something that you would have to announce and try to return, then I'd say probably not. But again, if I left you to see something, if I see the actual case discussed here, I'll let you know. I didn't see it discussed. That's just my inclination is that you would still be obligated to return it. So whoever owns it at this point. Okay, good. Would you like to stop here?
I think so.
What do you say? It's up to you. Sure. Yeah, sure. Stop here. Okay, so next time, so we might end up needing two more sessions to finish this rather than one. We'll have to see. The next time we will start with Section 3 and Section 5, which are basically going to be the question of when are things considered lost, meaning where do you find, if you find something in a specific location, when is it considered to be that you can assume that it was put there on purpose? When is it assumed to be that it was dropped there by accident? Which locations do you assume that maybe it's considered to be somewhat secure and you can leave it there? Which locations do you consider to be very public, unsecured places, and you would have to pick it up if it's something which is identifying mark? Those are the questions we'll deal with next time. And then we'll deal with the whole discussion of a simon and yeish as well. What's considered to be a valid simon, that it's identifying characteristic. I guess that'll be the main discussion next week, and then we'll probably meet another week after that to finish up. Okay, any other questions?
Good.
Okay. Yashar koach.